As we reach the 15th anniversary of 9/11, the establishment is attempting to derail 9/11 truth with disinformation about Saudi Arabia. But as Michelle Chosadovsky of globalresearch.ca points out, if we ever hope to derail the never-ending war on terror, we must be absolutely clear that neither Al-Qaeda nor Saudi Arabia could have pulled off the attacks of that day. This is the GRTV feature interview with your host, James Corbett, and our special guest, Michelle Chosadovsky.
The tragic events of September 11, 2001 constitute a fundamental landmark in American history, a decisive watershed, a breaking point. Millions of people have been misled regarding the causes and consequences of 9/11. 9/11 marks the onslaught of the global war on terrorism, used as a pretext and a justification by the United States and its NATO allies to carry out a war without borders, a global war of conquest. A far-reaching overhaul of military doctrine was launched in the wake of 9/11. 9/11 was also a stepping stone towards the relentless repeal of civil liberties, the militarization of law enforcement, and the inauguration of police state USA. Endless wars of aggression under the humanitarian cloak of counterterrorism and the responsibility to protect are set in motion.
So we are now at 9/11/2016, 15 years after the initial events. Tell us, in your estimation, where the 9/11 truth movement has come to in terms of its consensus on the key understandings of what happened on that day.
Well, I think the fundamental consensus which was reached several years ago was that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda could not, under any circumstances, have brought down the buildings, because those buildings were brought down through controlled demolition. And then, of course, there was the issue of Building 7, which collapsed in the afternoon of 9/11, and that, in effect, was barely covered by the media, as we recall. And again, no questions asked as to why a third building, which was not the object of attack, which had only small debris of fire, etc., all of a sudden had collapsed. And very significant, the media, both CNN and the BBC, announced the collapse of Building 7 at least 20 minutes before the actual occurrence, which points to, quote, a conspiracy at the highest levels, including, of course, the media itself.
So given this base-level understanding that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda could not possibly have organized the demolition of those buildings that did take place on that day, what do you see as the outcome of the latest narrative that is being injected into a lot of erstwhile alternative media right now that is seeking to pin the blame not on Al-Qaeda, but now on Saudi Arabia, given the commotion we've seen from Senator Bob Graham and others in recent months and years about the 28 pages that were recently released?
Well, these 28 pages constitute, in a sense, a tacit mechanism whereby the narrative, the original narrative, which has largely been refuted, can be reinserted. And in fact, it infiltrates the 9/11 truth movement. I've noticed that many scholars and analysts of 9/11 are prepared to accept it and don't understand the underlying logic. First of all, it has to be mentioned that Bob Graham and Porter Goss are very much involved in the propaganda process of 9/11. And that goes back to August 2001, when they visited Pakistan and met up with the head of ISI, in other words, Pakistani intelligence, General Mahmoud Ahmad. And then they returned to Washington. And then it just so happens on the morning of 9/11, they were having breakfast together with General Ahmad when it actually happened. Now, at the time, of course, we looked to this ISI connection, Pakistani intelligence, in the sense that ultimately we believed that ISI was a sponsor of the 9/11 attacks. We spoke of the money man behind 9/11, which was Mahmoud Ahmad. And then we were led to believe that the ISI was in fact sponsoring the hijackers and so on and so forth. But we also knew that those hijackers, Al-Qaeda, alleged hijackers, were linked to the CIA. And in other words, to say that Al-Qaeda is behind the 9/11 attacks ultimately points to the fact that the CIA was involved, because they are and they have been since the late 70s. They've been the sponsors, the intelligence sponsors of Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda is an intelligence asset. But in retrospect, Bob Graham and Porter Goss were involved in what we might describe as the preparation of a propaganda campaign, which the purpose was actually to sustain the legend that Al-Qaeda was behind it. Okay? Now, there's another very important occurrence which has long been forgotten. Dan Rather, CBS News, in an authoritative report, confirms that on the 10th of September 2001, the leader of Al-Qaeda, namely Osama bin Laden, was admitted to a Pakistani military hospital in Rawalpindi. Now, anybody who has been to Rawalpindi knows that this is a military city. It's the headquarters of the military intelligence. It's swarming with U.S. military advisors. And then, of course, in the wake of 9/11, they say, where is Osama bin Laden? We can't find him. And then the historic words of Donald Rumsfeld at the time, it's like looking for a needle in a stack of hay. We don't know where he is. But that was a lie. They knew perfectly well that on the 10th, he has been admitted to a Pakistani military hospital, which was within walking distance of the U.S. military missions, and that he could not reasonably have coordinated these attacks, admittedly, if he coordinated, but he should have been present in some form or another, presumably from his laptop, in the hospital. But the issue is that his whereabouts were known. He was admitted on the 10th. I don't have confirmation as to when he was released, but assuming he was released on the 11th, normally he would have been arrested immediately, and he was not. So that this, in effect, is also another element. There are many elements, but that is a notorious element. The whereabouts of bin Laden were known, he could have been arrested, and then the saga would have been over. But that didn't happen. What did happen, because the propaganda campaign was launched, is that on the 12th of September, NATO, the Atlantic Council, its governing body, intimated that the United States had been attacked by a foreign power. They didn't mention the foreign power, but the foreign power was Afghanistan. Now, I didn't see nobody saw any, Afghani jets in the streets, in the skies of New York that particular day. So that what they had done is to invoke Article 5 of the Washington Treaty, which is the founding document of the Atlantic Alliance, namely NATO, and then use this under the doctrine of collective security to announce a war against Afghanistan on the grounds of self-defense. Now, there are a couple of very crucial elements behind this. One is that through diplomatic channels, the Afghani government, which the Americans call the Taliban, they contacted the U.S. State Department and said, if you wish that we facilitate the extradition of Osama bin Laden and you provide us some grounds that he might have been involved in these events, we will gladly enter into collaboration with you. And this offer from the Afghani authorities was made on two separate occasions, to George W. Bush, and his response was, we do not negotiate with terrorists. In other words, they refused to extradite Osama bin Laden to the United States for a legal procedure. And instead, they proceeded in a criminal and a legal invasion of a sovereign country in Central Asia. Now, another important dimension to this whole saga is that you do not prepare a theater war in Central Asia, thousands and thousands of miles away, in less than 28 days. Impossible. Okay? So in other words, from the 11th of September to the 7th of October, you are not in a position from a military standpoint. Every military analyst knows it. All those who are on contract to the media organizations, they know that military planning takes a lot of time. In other words, that war on Afghanistan was prepared before 9/11, not after 9/11.
And just to further back up what you're saying there, I'll direct the viewers to National Security Presidential Directive 9, which was officially signed on October 25th, 2001, and was the National Security Directive devoted to eliminating the Al-Qaeda network and using all elements of national power to do so, including military. But that was signed on October 25th, 2001. It was presented to the president on September 4th. 2001, 1 week before 9/11 occurred. So just to back up your statement about the military planning that obviously went into the invasion of Afghanistan in October of 2001, given 9/11's role as the fundamental event which set in motion these borderless wars of aggression and the consolidation of the police state within the United States and the panopticon level of surveillance that has taken place in the name of protecting and securing the public from this imaginary terror threat, what then do you say to those who say that we're 15 years past this event, it's time to give up on 9/11 as a rallying call for activism or a way of trying to divert what's happening right now?
No, I think that 9/11 is absolutely fundamental, because the narrative, the official narrative, the propaganda narrative is extremely fragile. And if we can break that consensus that Al-Qaeda is the outside enemy of the Western world, and that Muslims, Muslims are killing our people in various terrorist attacks in European cities and so on and so forth, then we break the consensus. We show, in fact, that Al-Qaeda is being used as a pretext and a justification to wage war. But there's another element. We know for a fact that decision directive which you mentioned was never implemented. Quite the contrary, immediately after the 9/11 attacks, the United States and its allies, through various mechanisms, has consistently supported Al-Qaeda, the Al-Qaeda networks throughout, not solely in the Middle East and Central Asia, but in sub-Saharan Africa with Boko Haram, in the Maghreb, in Libya, in Syria. They support the ISIS, they support the Al-Qaeda-affiliated opposition, they support the moderate terrorists. Now, if they had been consistent in defining their counterterrorism role, they would have gone after these guys. They didn't. Quite the opposite. And it would have been very easy to liquidate the ISIS, Daesh convoys and the Toyota trucks when they crossed from Syria into Iraq with conventional weapons. The U.S. Air Force could have come in a matter of 20 minutes, they would have liquidated them. So again, we have a whole series of events which lead to the extension of this global war on terrorism. But you see, what is now happening with the 28 pages is that they say Saudi Arabia is involved. Now, that is really a way of shifting the blame in the state sponsorship of terrorism to a foreign power, with a view essentially to creating a vacuum in terms of any kind of police investigation as to who might be responsible. And I'm not going to say who is responsible, because I think that has to do with a police investigation. All we can say at this stage is the official narrative is a lie. It's based on fabrications. It doesn't stand up. It has been refuted. And the next stage is, of course, that police authorities respond to their mandate and conduct an investigation. Without 9/11, they would be in great difficulty in waging the wars in Syria, Yemen, and other countries around the world, because the 9/11 consensus provides them with the pretext. It's a war of self-defense. We're being attacked, and so on and so forth. And that is why 9/11 ultimately is so important in terms of what is happening today, which is a war without borders, a globalization of war.
We have to break this myth of 9/11 to really untangle all of the webs that have been weaved around it over the years and all of these wars that are going on right now. So on that note, we'll direct people, of course, to globalresearch.ca, where they will find enormous amounts of information, not only, of course, about 9/11 and related aspects of what happened on that day, but, of course, everything that's happening around the world as a result of that day as well. Michelle Chosadovsky, thank you again for your time today.
Now available from globalresearch.ca. The threat of nuclear war. The destabilization of foreign countries. The movement to resist this worldwide aggression. These are the topics addressed in The Globalization of War, America's Long War Against Humanity, the new book by award-winning author Professor Michelle Chosadovsky.
America's hegemonic project in the post-9/11 era is the globalization of war, whereby the U.S. NATO military machine, coupled with covert intelligence operations, economic sanctions, and the thrust of regime change, is deployed in all major regions of the world. The threat of preemptive nuclear war is also used to blackmail countries into submission. This long war against humanity is carried out at the height of the most serious economic crisis in modern history. It is intimately related to a process of financial restructuring, which has resulted in the collapse of national economies and the impoverishment of large sectors of the world population. The ultimate objective is world conquest under the cloak of human rights and Western democracy.
Buy your copy today and discover what is being hailed as a must-read and diplomatic dynamite. Available now at globalresearch.ca or wherever fine books are sold.